During the last downturn, the economy was faltering, jobs were scarce, and residents were suffering. And we actually stumbled into impact because we didn't know what these words were. We didn't know what impact was or ESG or anything like that. And so we just asked a simple question, how do we help? We set out on this grand social experiment, and we just decided to step back and look at what we could do for our residents and provide services to address resiliency and financial vulnerabilities. And what happened was we had no financial agenda with this approach, but after 9 months, this one property was gushing cash.
Hi, I'm Gordon Lanthier, and welcome to the Real Finds podcast, the podcast that interviews key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers shaping real estate and, as a result, our world.
On today's podcast, we'll be speaking with Peter Slough, at Jenny Romero.
Peter is founder and managing partner at Open Path Investments, a multifamily impact investment firm founded in 2005. And Jenny is president of New Earth Residential Management, a firm focused on driving investment returns through supporting thriving communities. Working together, Open Path Investments and New Earth Residential have amassed a portfolio of investments across 17 states. On the podcast, we discuss the state of multifamily, effective multifamily management, and impact investing for financial success. It's well worth a listen.
Peter, Jenny, thanks for hopping on the podcast today.
You bet. Thanks for the opportunity.
So before we start, why real estate?
Well, that's a good question. I've been in real estate since my teens, actually coming from a real estate family and the residential side. But I hopped into commercial real estate back in 2007 as a lender for GMAC Commercial Mortgage, and placed debt and equity on all asset classes. But then found myself gravitating more and more towards multifamily as an asset class that I specialized in. So we actually started the business almost 20 years ago. It'll be our 20th anniversary in 2025. And we started the New Earth Residential, the property management company, 5 years ago with the idea of putting impact first in our mission and making sure we looked after residents as much as we looked after financial. So Jenny's been on board to run our property management company. And we basically approach the industry as almost impact as a service. And so that's been really beneficial to align our goals and make sure that we're looking after residents and putting a resident first approach into the business, back into the business.
So what drove you to kind of really focus in on impact as a service? Because that's not typically what commercial real estate investors see when they're looking at a management company or looking at commercial real estate investing in general. What was the impetus for that?
Yeah, so I was kind of trained classically with spreadsheets and what I'll call two-dimensional thinking, where these were strictly numbers and values. And back in 2009, during the last downturn, the economy was faltering, jobs were scarce, and residents were suffering. And we actually stumbled into impact because we didn't know what these words were. We didn't know what impact was or ESG or anything like that. And so we just asked a simple question, how do we help? We had a lot of communities in Salt Lake City specifically. And again, the jobs were scarce and residents were suffering. And I realized pretty quickly that if our residents were suffering, the whole business thesis would falter. So we set out on this grand social experiment, and we just decided to step back and look at what we could do for our residents and provide services to address resiliency and financial vulnerabilities. And what happened was we had no financial agenda with this approach, but after 9 months, this one property was gushing cash, and that was unexpected. So what we found was that rents were flat, yet our expenses were declining rapidly. And so we had less turnover costs, marketing costs, countertops, carpet, paint, all the replacement costs that you incur, because we had a stable community and we were 100% occupied.
Talking about kind of the amenities that you've created on properties that increase resilience, what are those amenities? Because often people, when they think of amenities at a property, they're going to think of a pool or a gym.
Yeah.
Like what's really driving like resilient amenities?
So it's less tangible and more intangible. It's more about programming and social support. And so what we found, we've developed four pillars of impact. So building community, developing leaders, channeling resources, and enhancing the property environment. So I'd say one of our bigger, more successful pillars, well, there's a couple. Certainly building community, community events are paramount to sort of creating a social glue to the property. But then we really look for channeling resources. What resources can we bring from outside the community and bring into the property with the goal of really tapping financial fitness, mental and well-being, mental health and well-being, and connectivity throughout the property. So one of our big goals going forward and has been for a couple of years is getting what I'll call net zero rents. So if a resident is paying $800 to $1,250 a month in rent, we will actually look for goods and resources from outside of our property to bring in and help them lower their cost of living. So it's a big goal, but we're chipping away at it pretty methodically. And the idea is like, what services can we bring that'll help improve their lives as well as reduce their cost of living and get us somewhere to that net zero rent calculation.
And what kind of services are you bringing in?
Jenny, do you want to speak to a little bit of our successful programs?
Sure, absolutely. So right now we have one that we just added over the last 30 days, which is called Lasagna Love. And so we can log in and order a lasagna dinner for any family at our community, and then they can also log in and do it for themselves or for somebody that they know that's in need. Another one we have is Sleep in Heavenly Peace, which provides free mattresses for the residents that are in need. That one's a great one. That one, we always try to find national partnerships as well as partnerships in the local area and community as well. Another one we have is Waterford, which is online schooling to prep kids to going into kindergarten. So, and if they don't have internet or a computer, they'll also help provide that. So those are just a few of them. I can go into a whole list of them, but all of them to just better the residents' life, take a little bit of pressure off of their shoulders as, you know, inflation is hurting all of them. So another one we really focus on is trying to find food resources for the residents. So for example, in Las Vegas, we have the Just One program, and they provide $100 a month in free food for our residents. They actually deliver it to the communities there.
I know I want to come back to kind of what your typical resident looks like, but how do you go about reaching out and getting these services into your building?
Sure. Included in our management fee is our Urban Village program. And right now I have 5 full-time team members that their full-time job is channeling resources to the communities, because the on-site team, the manager, they're never going to have time to find these resources. They need to be collecting rent and leasing apartments and talking with the residents and inspecting apartments and doing all the day-to-day operations. So part of our management fee is to provide this, and it's no additional cost to our clients.
I was just going to add, we've created this online resident hub as well, which really spells out in each state, each market, what resources are available. And so getting that in front of the residents has been really beneficial. And just to add to some of the successful programming, you know, we've had mobile dental units roll through and provide checkups, haircuts, vaccines. And so, again, we're trying to really serve our residents by bringing the goods and services to them.
And so on a typical property, we're not talking about the top high income earners. I'm guessing it's a little bit more down the economic spectrum. What does a typical tenant look like in most of your multifamily buildings?
Well, I'd categorize them because we do have Class C to Class A properties, especially with New Earth Residential. They actually serve other operators as well. And so it's a broad range. It could be blue collar class or lower, lesser means, and I don't mean to imply lower, but lesser means financially. It could be affordable housing, low income housing properties as well. But we also have Class A. And so what we found that's been successful is when we address programming, we don't necessarily do a top down approach where we think we know best. We actually let the residents inform us, depending on their demographic, of what goods and services or community events are more important to them.
And it really doesn't matter the class of product. There's always going to be somebody that needs assistance. We even have a program called NAMI, which is mental health services that are free for the residents. There's also residents at communities that they want to give back. So we have communities with a lot of engineers that will do monthly math tutoring classes for residents in the neighborhood. So there's different things like that that we'll do to cater the program to each individual community and what is most effective for them.
What are you seeing generally from your attempt to create more resilient buildings?
Yeah, so we're showing the residents how much we care about them. And in return, they care about living in the community and taking care of the community. So, you know, when you're in, it's summertime and kids are out of school, there tends to be a little bit more busyness around the community. But when they know we care about them, instead of kicking in the rain gutters and running around and doing what kids do, they know we care about them, we care about the community. And we've definitely seen a decrease in things like that happening at the communities that we manage.
Yeah, and I'd say there's a lot to borrow from the hospitality business, where a good hotel is going to look after their customers if they expect them to return. So the same kind of thought pattern flows through to multifamily, where, you know, you take care of your residents and treat them with dignity, and you're going to have a stickier community, and you're going to have more referrals, potentially wait lists to get into the property, but really engaging the residents and making them kind of our priority as a customer service driven business has been a pretty good aspect of our element of our secret sauce to running proper deals.
In terms of, there's ultimately going to be a balance, right? In terms of providing services and kind of what you get back. How have you found that balance plays out between financial goals and investors and the ownership of the management company?
Yeah, so I think that I could argue all day long that impact is actually a necessary ingredient if you want to hit your financial returns. Again, borrowing from the hospitality sector, you know, it's just good business. And frankly, if you're not sort of tackling these issues, eventually the wheels are going to come off. You need a resilient community to really kind of balance your financial thesis. And so I've found no conflict in that. Yes, we have higher overhead costs at the property management company where, you know, we've got additional staff, but that's the cost of doing business. And if you want to be successful, I think that's an important part to consider.
How would you define, I know we've been talking about impact investing for a while now. How would you define impact investing in the real estate context for somebody who's listening who might not be as familiar as all three of us are?
Yeah, I think just taking the approach that social and environmental returns are equally important to financial returns is kind of a key thought in this notion. That is impact investing and reinvesting money and resources back into your property in order to achieve the financial goals. The two go hand in hand.
So when you're going out and you're looking for properties that you want to deploy these management practices at, or just properties in general, what does a good deal look like? Because this seems to be a relatively new concept in multifamily. Where are you looking to deploy your management company and kind of your assets in general?
Well, I think from the property management company side of it, and maybe Jenny will offer some thoughts here too, but you know, you're looking for a physical plant that's got good bones. It doesn't need to have amenities such that you'll find in a Class A community, but just good gathering spaces, markets where there's job growth and population growth are obviously key drivers for supply demand considerations. I'd say the impact is needed everywhere. So it's really about where the clients are buying their assets, and then we layer in our approach to property management. Again, getting back to that impact as a service. And it started with Open Path in terms of our mission and aligning our goals back in 2009, as I mentioned earlier. But Open Path is a pretty small to mid-sized player. We have about $1 billion in multifamily, but Jenny has taken the company to represent not just Open Path, but now third-party clients. And so we're personally and professionally, we're able to scale our mission through New Earth Residential and really touch other people's lives as well, and really kind of scale the business model across the industry.
Jenny, can you talk about kind of how that scaling process has worked and what the key factors are in kind of upscaling New Earth?
Sure. As far as growth with our program. Yeah. So anytime we manage a community, we've really just grown off of referrals. And so we're in 15 states right now. There's two more we'll probably add by the end of the year. But we really have catered everything to be what's best for each individual community and asset. And that's allowed us to really grow off of referrals, because we can manage, you know, a property in a market where maybe we haven't been before, or maybe it's just one community in that market, and been able to deliver the impact there and grow the NOI and meet our clients' goals there and our goals on the impact side of things. And then that's led to them buying additional communities or changing management on additional communities.
So in terms of kind of multifamily in general, let's take a step back to kind of the broader multifamily world. What trends are you seeing in multifamily in general? Because I know that you guys are over 15 states and you're growing, and what are you seeing generally in the market?
So within multifamily, the industry is starting to pay attention to how we address impact, social and environmental. And that's a nice sort of tailwind for us, because we've been doing it for the last, 15 years as far as the impact side of it. And so I think what's happening is that we're realizing as an industry how important our residents really are for all kinds of reasons. But when I'm seeing lenders and large institutional players and owners stepping into the conversation, we're starting to really cross collaborate and make sure that we're sharing best practices within the industry. So that's been a really nice evolution, and I think it kind of validates what we've been up to all along, and that's a pretty recent trend over the last year or two, frankly. And so I feel somewhat vindicated in our approach to the business, in the sense that, this is a three-dimensional model. These aren't just spreadsheets. So we've got to look deeper and act accordingly so that we can actually make a difference. We're sitting on the, 50-yard line of house and renter household America, and there's a lot of opportunity there to explore. I think one of our challenges has been, taking on too much. So we've kind of refined our strategy and our target impact goals, around the top, top five versus the top 20. So trying to scale these programs across the country has always been a challenge, but we've been learning and we've been at it for 15 years, as I mentioned. And so really kind of refining what we target and what we focus on is important.
What are kind of the pitfalls that you guys have seen of places where it's maybe not a direct hit when you're talking about targeting? Where is impact investing typically, less efficient?
Well, we could come up with all kinds of programs, and I think resident engagement is the key challenge. And that's always been, you can lead a horse to water, so to speak. And a lot of cases we bring in such great programming and then it goes unattended or not participated in. So I think the pitfalls have been trying to bring all these great programs and resources to the property, but then getting residents to actually engage. That's been a challenge, and that's what we'll continue to work on.
And I know there's so many landlords out there that listen to this podcast that are looking for tenant engagement. How do you figure out with engagement? I know you've mentioned surveying your tenants. How does that process work for you guys?
So typically after we take over a community, we wait about 30 days for the site to be ready for the Urban Village program. That gives the manager, the leasing team, the service team time to meet the residents and really know each resident a little bit more and the ins and outs of the community a little bit more than what we do as an Urban Village launch. So the impact coordinator for that community will go out to the site and launch the program with the team members first. So that way they get a good introduction on the community, as well as if there's any new team members, they get to learn about the Urban Village program from their impact coordinator. And each impact coordinator has about 15 properties. So once they've done that and they can talk to the site team more about what they feel the community needs to be valuable to the residents, if it's, you know, resident events, if it's adding something environmental like gardens, beehives. So we really go through the four pillars with them. And then from there, we'll survey the residents to get their feedback too. And then that way we can get both all aligned and really go full force on channeling resources to the community and resident events that the residents will want to attend. And then each quarter we do a quarterly call with the team to make sure we're going the right direction, the residents are utilizing the services, and then make any pivots that we need to at that time. And our clients also get a quarterly impact report with their financial statements for each quarter as well.
So in terms of impact, one of the biggest impacts we've seen in general has been the shift in migration patterns in the multifamily space. And we've had a lot of people come on and talk from the Sun Belt. We've had some people come on and talk from more traditional multifamily markets in the North, Northeast, and West Coast. And I'm curious, what are you guys seeing in terms of multifamily migration patterns, particularly since your assets and management company is deployed over 15 and soon to be 17 states?
I think the first thing on the leasing side of things, when we go through our CRM and look at their people are not moving in the same state, they're moving from another state to whether it's downtown Salt Lake City or it's, you know, a suburb in Denver. That's one of the largest things we see is there's been a decrease in traffic in the current area, but more from other states as they're moving further than they used to.
Are you seeing with that like a certain demographic of people typically moving to your properties from other states, or is it just generally across the board movement patterns and kind of assorting?
Well, I could probably tell you a few states, but I think everybody probably already knows.
Well, you can tell us a few states. Yeah.
A lot of people from California.
A lot of people moving from California to other states within your portfolio. Yeah. And what demographics or I should say, what localities are they moving to that you're typically seeing?
You know, it's a mix. And I think that we'd probably need to dive into the data a little further to provide that for you. I don't have it all memorized because, again, like we really focus on, hey, what does this community need? What's going to maximize NOI? I will say that I think that, you know, for several years during COVID, the site teams were collection agencies, right? So when there's a shift now where they need to go back to, and over the last year or so, back to leasing. And so I think that the urban village things that we offer helps the residents who may be, you know, frustrated with whatever bills, you know, they couldn't pay during COVID or, you know, whatever challenges they have with inflation. With these services provided to them, it takes the edge off. They're nicer. They like the site team. They appreciate them. So I think those are two. Regardless of where anybody is moving from, I definitely see that making a big difference. And our site teams are happier because the residents are, you know, treat them well too.
So one of the things that we love talking about on the podcast is hiring and maximizing your team. And I'm curious, what is the biggest thing that you look for in terms of hiring individuals that would be on your site team?
Yeah, so I would say that attitude is everything. We want people that are passionate to be there, that care about impact, care about the residents, care about the community, that it's not just a job, that there's career growth for them and there's lots of opportunities ongoing because even though you may think that AI may be able to take over some things, you still need real people in property management, and I think you always will.
I couldn't say that's more true in many ways. Having someone that walks a building and spots things is absolutely critical. I'm curious, how do you go about finding individuals or developing kind of that ethos when you're going out and sending out a a request for resumes. How do you find those individuals that are particularly interested in impact investing?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is definitely referrals. So whether it's for new clients, whether it's for team members, we want to find people, clients, team members that are aligned and are rowing in the same direction here. So talking about that first with them and our current team members being engaged in the program and seeing the difference allows us to add new team members that are aligned on those things. Maybe, you know, some, a lot of them have heard about it before because one of their friends or family members works for us. So the referral side of that is huge.
We have a pretty unique culture within North Residential as well as Open Path, and it's really about being mission aligned and being a part of something bigger than yourself, being part of something that's mission driven or purpose driven. And that's a real big factor in terms of attracting new talent, staffing, and because I think most people are more fulfilled if they're part of something that's actually doing some good out there. So the old guard of, you know, heads on beds and, you know, spreadsheet thinking, it's just got to go at some point. And someday my hope is that impact is no longer a special word. It's just good business. And we get sort of away from the trendy, you know, words that suggest that you're doing something unique. It's kind of, I think it's inherent in our DNA. And I'd like to see that sort of message and mission spread across the industry, which it kind of already is, which is great.
So when we're talking about evolution and kind of how the industry has changed, I think we're going to move on to our final four. And our final four is always a great opportunity to learn a little bit more about both you, Peter, and you, Jenny, and kind of learn kind of where you see the industry going in general. So I'm curious, and either one of you can start with this one. It's one of my favorite questions. Where do you see multifamily in general going 10 years out?
Okay. Well, I think I kind of leaked my answer, and that's where impact won't be anything special. It'll just be part of doing good business. I think the more and more that we evolve in a direction where we're really looking after our residents and really trying to drive that net zero rent concept, bringing goods and services, channeling resources into the property, and making sure that you know, there is resilience and we are looking after our residents so that they can survive. They can not only survive, but they're also going to thrive. That's a key differentiator because a lot of our residents don't have the time to kind of think outside the box. And so we're trying to do everything that we can to make sure that we're meeting their needs at home.
And Jenny, beyond impact investing, do you see any other trends that we should be watching out for?
I mean, I would definitely say that collections continuing to improve. Peter and I were just talking about rent growth in 2025. So I think, you know, we're on the moving forward on both of those things in the near future.
So one of the big things that we love to talk about on the podcast is kind of taking a step back. There's a lot of younger investors. And by younger, I just mean anyone kind of under, you know, 30, 35, that's somewhat starting out in their industry. What little bit of advice would you give yourself maybe when you were starting out in the real estate industry?
Yeah. Originally, I was focused on financial. And I would say get very clear with something that fulfills purpose, something that exemplifies your values, and then pour yourself into it. I think that's a different shift. And sometimes you don't have the luxury of behaving that way. But if you can start with what fills your heart, I think the financial will follow.
I mean, one thing that I would say that I think we probably haven't talked about yet is that, you know, the site teams more than ever need support. And so looking for a management company that, you know, they're not giving their regional managers, you know, 15 properties or 12 properties because just with the workforce changing, they need a lot more support and attention than before. And so really, I would say one thing is making sure that you're going with a company that is aligned with that so that your asset gets a lot of attention.
And why do you think that's particularly important?
The workforce has changed so much. And so you as the support team to the site team, showing that you care and that you're there to help them is just something that people will leave. They'll leave at the end of day one if they don't feel that. If they yes. just feel they're given keys and thrown into the asset, they're not staying. And, you know, we want our team members to stay and be aligned and make a difference. The residents get attached to team members. So the more that, you know, the support team or the regional manager MVPs can go to the site and show them they're supported and see, you know, where their pain points are and strategize on fixing them, it makes a huge difference.
So in terms of making a difference, one of the things that we love to talk about on this podcast is books that can make a difference in our lives. And I'm a big reader, and I'm curious, Jenny or Peter, if you have a book that you'd be particularly interested in sharing that our listeners could pick up on tape or even in a physical copy.
I'm a big fan of the book called Second Mountain by David Brooks. And it has to do with, you know, we spend much of our early career striving after the material and the financial, and in reality, getting to your second mountain where you're purpose-based and you're driven based on the needs and something greater than yourself. I think that's a big message of how you conduct yourself professionally and personally. I'm a big fan of the book called Second Mountain by David Brooks. And it has to do with, you know, we spend much of our early career striving after the material and the financial, and in reality, getting to your second mountain where you're purpose-based and you're driven based on the needs and something greater than yourself. I think that's a big message of how you conduct yourself professionally and personally.
Yeah, I think that's one of the whole reasons for this podcast is kind of talking about more interesting facets of real estate than just the spreadsheet itself. And anybody who would be interested in potentially the industry, I think that's a great pickup. Jenny, do you have a book that you would recommend?
The latest one I read with the team, and we engage the site teams as well as the support team, and it is the Energy Bus, which is a great book for morale and looking on, you know, the bright side of things. And then any book about hospitality is also, those books are really good and can really transfer over to the multifamily side of things.
And what's a hospitality book that that someone should pick up?
The Crucial Conversation and Unreasonable Hospitality are both really good books as well.
Yeah, Unreasonable Hospitality is a phenomenal read. And anybody who's in, you know, office, industrial, flex, multifamily, please go pick up and read Unreasonable Hospitality. That book is essential for anybody just remotely in the service industry. Now, for anybody who's remotely in the service industry who's listening to the podcast right now, the whole reason for the podcast is we want to reach out to men and women in the arena who can give us insight into who the next man or woman in the arena that we should reach out to is. And I'm curious, Jenny or Peter, do either of you have a suggestion for the next person we should reach out to?
Yeah, I do. I think you should try and get a hold of Bob Simpson. He's formed the Multifamily Impact Council, which is really a council of all players in the ecosystem, from Freddie to Fannie to a lot of the larger multifamily owner operators, right down to insurance companies and other lenders as well. So we're all banding together, basically, and we're an early member to basically collaborate and open source share what best practices could be.
We have one final question before we end the podcast. And it's just simply, if there's an individual that wants to reach out to either of you guys, what's the best way to get in contact?
Sure. So my direct number is 801-450-4951, or they can email me at jromera@newearthres.com.
And I can be reached at peter@openpathinvestments.com.
Jenny and Peter, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast. We truly appreciate it, and we have to have you guys on in the future.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Peter and Jenny. We appreciate their insights. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. Your comments, interactions, and subscriptions truly matter and help us to continue to provide quality guests. You can follow us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanfear with the Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening.